All right, our next case is 12-1324, the Disciplinary Council versus Leo Johnny Talika. For the respondent, Mr. Koblenz.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rich Koblenz, and I have the honor of representing Leo Johnny Talika before this honorable court on his disciplinary matter. As a preliminary matter, I would just simply seek to remind this court, although I don't believe you need reminding, of the overriding purpose of the disciplinary system, which is to protect the public. I'm in an extremely unique position here, and I've argued many of these matters before this honorable court, and that my opponent, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, and I have the exact same position here relative to the sanction which should be meted out to Mr. Talika. Additionally, I would call to the court's attention the fact that since the close of the briefing, Mr. Talika has made full restitution now to the three clients that restitution was found to be appropriate to be paid back to by the panel and by the Board of Commissioners, as well as by the stipulations that were entered into by the parties. And we have provided proof of that restitution to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel.
So if we could start from that point,
yes,
perhaps, let's say that we impose the indefinite suspension, but the condition of the indefinite suspension is payment of restitution. Since payment of restitution has already been made, would it be your position that the indefinite suspension should then be lifted? And wouldn't that benefit your client?
We don't believe an indefinite suspension is appropriate under the case law, under the policies by the court.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm asking you is, couldn't the indefinite suspension actually be a lesser term than a two-year suspension if restitution has in fact already been made?
No, ma'am, it cannot. Under the rules of this court, an indefinite suspension requires a minimum of 2 years before an application can be filed for reinstatement, and then a trial must take place before the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline. The Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline would then make a report to this honorable court, and this honorable court would then make the determination as to whether or not the attorney who made that application would be allowed back into the practice. The case law instructs us that an indefinite suspension doesn't mean you'll get your license back in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, or ever. So an indefinite suspension, ma'am, I believe would be totally inappropriate as a sanction here. The stipulated sanction that was entered into by and between the parties, as well as approved by the panel, required the repayment of restitution before Mr. Talika would have been allowed to be reinstated even under the time suspension. So I don't believe that an indefinite suspension would...
So how much has he repaid?
He has repaid back, Your Honor, the total of $48,871.29.
And that included all the interest, et cetera, that was calculated?
No, ma'am, there was no calculation of interest. That is the total amount. We would pay back any interest once the calculation was presented to us.
Because he owed $39,196, $8,000 plus to another client, and about $1,000 to Fran Cantrell. Cantrell.
That is correct, and he has paid back all of that money.
But not any interest, but that was part of the recommendation that interest accrue, correct?
Right, and we have no problem paying the interest back. We don't know what the interest would be. And frankly, Your Honor, it would be a matter of just giving us a calculation of the interest, and that would be forthcoming.
Okay, what is your client doing now?
My client is recovering from back surgery. However, he is still engaged in the sole practice of law. He does have an office, he shares office space. And he is in the process of seeking to wind down his practice because he knows that a suspension is coming. It's just a matter of preparing for that. And we have taken the steps, and I've been working with James Kerner, who shares office space with my client, who's also bar counsel for the Lake County Bar Association, looking toward the transitioning of Mr. Talika's practice.
Counsel, I noticed that the board is indeed seeking a more severe sanction than you and disciplinary counsel suggest.
And also harsher than the panel suggested, right. Also, Your Honor.
And I've read the cases upon which they rely, and I guess it's still not clear to me from this record before us, particularly with the $39,000 that has been repaid. I don't see anything in the record suggesting there's any theft of funds. This looks more like an iota shuffling of funds and failure to account and a failure to do that.
That is correct, Your Honor. And the cases that would call for the more severe sanction have additional misconduct involved. There's failure to cooperate with the system. There's misconduct during the hearing. There's lying. There's failure to cooperate. In this situation, Your Honors, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel had the opportunity to depose Mr. Talika on several occasions. There have been meetings with Mr. Talika. We've had a full cooperation by and between the parties. The Office of Disciplinary Counsel was fully aware of everything, and that's contained in the what I'm going to call the complete stipulations that were presented to the panel, which were accepted by the panel. The panel also could have determined that they wanted to have a hearing. The panel determined that a hearing wasn't necessary based upon the stipulations that were presented to them, and quite frankly, also, I believe some of the conversations that took place during the pretrial conversations by and between counsel and the panel chair.
And Mr. Talika is currently 73, is that correct?
Your Honor, I believe he's 74.
All right, and is he planning on retirement in the foreseeable future?
He would like to continue to practice, Your Honor. However, retirement is something he's thinking about. He's been, he's had some physical problems over the last year, culminating in major back surgery that was just done last week. I had the opportunity to speak to Mr. Talika's family yesterday. He is just ready to be released from the hospital, and he does have a period of rehabilitation to go through. But he has been an attorney practicing law in the state of Ohio since 1966. He has been an honored attorney. He has been an extremely valued member of not only the legal profession, but also his community. He served on, for example, the Lake County Mental Retardation Board. He has worked in the schools. He has also served at the pleasure of this court two terms on the Board of Commissioners on Character and Fitness. This is a man who had a pristine legal career, and we also submitted evidence.
So, counsel, what's the rationale that you're offering for this inability to understand how an IOLTA account should be managed, the inability to provide statements to clients upon the disbursement of funds, the inability to come to a meeting of the minds with the clients when you're dealing with, you know, this amount of money for their benefit? Did this just crop up in the last couple years of his practice?
Your Honor, all I can tell you is that these problems just cropped up. I believe
with
that
these clients, but I, you know, I can't help but wonder, did he always operate this way? And all of a sudden he was called upon, you know, by clients that weren't going to tolerate it? Or was there a significant occurrence with either his mental functioning, his health, or some other reason that would trigger this departure from the appropriate way to manage an IOLTA account?
Your Honor, as the proffer, as the evidence suggests that was proffered to the panel and to the board and is in the court file, Mr. Talika was overwhelmed by the amount of business he was doing. He has sought, through his reparative actions that he has taken, he has become a member of OLAP. He was examined in his counseling with Robert Kaplan, a very honored psychologist in the Cleveland area, who submitted a report talking about the fact that Mr. Talika was taking on more business than he could handle, and with his age, he needed to learn how to gear back. And quite frankly, Mr. Talika is an extremely prideful man who takes a tremendous amount of pride in the work that he has done over the years, and he did not have the ability to know that he needed to gear back some and slow himself down. He now understands that with the reparative action that he's taken, and with the counseling that he's taken, with his adherence to his OLAP contract, I believe that this court can, in its de novo review, can feel extremely comfortable. Mr. Talika will take on the amount of work that he can handle. As far as the actual IOLTA situation is concerned, Your Honor, the only thing I can tell you is based upon my practice, a number of older practitioners did not really understand and still are having trouble understanding all of the ministerial functions that need to take place on an IOLTA account. For example, I do seminars. I do probably 15 CLE presentations a year to our colleagues, and every year I continue to do IOLTA presentations on Rule 1.15, and quite frankly, a lot of lawyers come up to me after these presentations and say, nobody ever explained this to me before. Now, I'm not going to say that it's right. I'm not going to say that those rules aren't written out, but I will tell you that within the profession, a tremendous number of our colleagues are not aware of all of the ministerial needs that they have to conform with Rule 1.15, and as a result, they
well,
don't.
What Like what? What's so complicated? What do we need to simplify so that
I'm not saying simple, Your Honor. It's a matter of keeping all the records. It's doing all the ledger sheets, having separate ledger sheets for each client, having to do the reconciliations, all the various ministerial requirements that
it
are there.
It sounds like, are you just talking about simple accounting? Money in, money out? Whose money is it?
Well, I'm talking about the record keeping involved, Your Honor, and all the things that you need to do that, and the people.
Which would be what? I have a hard time understanding how this is so hard for people who managed to graduate from law school and pass the bar to understand.
I'm not saying
which part is hard to understand.
Once they're educated to it, I don't think any of it's hard to understand. Quite frankly, Your Honor, we put together a book for our clients who come in and give them a basically how-to with forms and all the various things that they need. I'm just telling you that my experience has been, and it's an experience that's been shared.
You keep talking about this panoply of various things. Isn't it just simple math? How much money did you take in? How much money is were the client's expenses?
That part of it is that you paid, and
what is your fee contract? They do understand they have to have a contract, right?
I understand all of that, Your Honor, yes.
I mean, the lawyers.
They should understand that. It is part of the rules. I'm just telling you, Your Honor, unfortunately, a number of our colleagues don't get the appropriate education, especially the ones who've been around for a while, don't get all the education that they need.
They don't keep up with it themselves. It's not the court's fault or the bar's fault or whatever. There's no complicated formula here that they have to have an advanced math degree to figure out how much money is deposited in an account and where it's being dispersed. It's record keeping and it's attention to detail.
You're absolutely right.
So
for somebody
to come before us and say, I just had no idea I had to keep track of my client's money is just unacceptable.
Your Honor, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm simply explaining what happened here. You asked for an explanation.
But Mr. Koblenz, this case transcends someone not understanding. This is a commingling of funds. This is taking funds that belong to one client personal use, and then distributing to a different client.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. And the case law.
Are you saying that is commonly misunderstood, that lawyers shouldn't be doing that?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying, I'm talking about
the record. I think every lawyer in Ohio knows you cannot commingle your personal funds with an IOLTA account. Don't you think that's universally understood?
It should be universally understood, Your
Honor.
And
that's the conduct that your client committed.
And we're not seeking to excuse that conduct, Your Honor. We admit that. We own it. We've said that. We stipulated to it. What I'm saying is the appropriate sanction, taking this case as a unique disciplinary case, as all cases are, looking at all of the facts, the appropriate sanction here is a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed based upon that. I'm not seeking in any way to excuse Mr. Tlika's conduct.
All I simply did
in response to the question was try to explain what I know from what I've seen over the years with our colleagues.
If he's planning to come back, has he identified the person that's going to monitor him for the year?
Your Honor, the monitor would be selected by the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. So we would simply hope that we would understand, and I know from my dealings with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, that they would pick the appropriate monitor.
Right.
And that's who we would work with. And Mr. Tlika, again, through OLAP, and again, his counseling, is going to change the way he was doing things. Nothing that has been presented either to the panel, the board, or this court, or to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, seeks to say what Mr. Tlika did was okay. I'm not arguing that at all. What I'm arguing is, based upon the precedent, based upon the policies that this court has set forth, taking a look at Leo Tlika, the career that he has had, the honor that he has brought to this profession prior to this misconduct, what he has lent to his community, and the service he can, and with the accession of this court, will provide to the public in the future, calls for an appropriate sanction of a two-year suspension with the second year stayed based upon the conditions as set forth by the board.
And one of those conditions is monitoring for a year.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I have Mr. Tlika has no problem with that. I think it's absolutely appropriate that he should be monitored for a year.
Okay, and then he still would intend coming back and being a solo practitioner.
I believe that we have talked about the idea of him associating with a law firm, Your Honor. I believe he would like to do that. Obviously, those are
It's a difficult thing to do.
Well, those are arrangements that would have to be made in the future, right, when and if he has the opportunity to regain his licensure. However, I do believe that he would be, and I've talked to Mr. Tleek about this, I think he'd be a very valued mentor in a law firm setting to younger lawyers. He's been trying cases since the 1960s. He's had a tremendous amount of success as a practicing lawyer. And as I've said before, he has a very good feel for the community, and I think that he would be an excellent addition to a law firm. Whether or not that would be something to be worked out, I quite frankly don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. King.
May it please the court. I am Assistant Disciplinary Counsel Philip King, and I'm here on behalf of the relator, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. Now, we're here because the respondent has objected to the board's recommendation that he receive an indefinite suspension. We respect the board's recommendation. However, we agree that the sanction that was recommended by the panel, the two-year suspension with 1 year stayed on the conditions stated in paragraph 20 of the board report, is sufficient, and we're asking the court to impose that sanction as opposed to the indefinite suspension that was recommended by the board.
What would be in the record that would cause the board to go from a stipulated sanction as such as you've articulated for us to an indefinite suspension? Is there something in this record that would cause the board to think that that would be more appropriate that we should consider?
Well, Justice O'Donnell, that ties into my first point as for the reason why the panel's recommendation is more appropriate. On the final page of the report, they mentioned the extensiveness of Mr. Talika's misconduct in involving 8 clients. Now, we cited the Falwell case as far as the precedent in this case that the court can consider. So the question becomes whether or not that Falwell, the application of the Falwell case, takes into account the extensiveness of misconduct that's in this case. And the answer to that question is yes. In Falwell, we had a case in which that involved 7 individuals, 6 clients, 1 employee. Here, we have misconduct involving eight clients. So you see in both cases, in the Falwell case and in this case, the misconduct affected a significant amount of clients. And the decision that this court reached in Falwell was the two-year, one-year stay.
Do you recall how much money was involved in Falwell?
In Falwell, there were smaller denominations. It probably totaled about $17,000.
Mm-hmm. And restitution had not been made by the time the board had considered this.
Correct, and in fact, restitution has just been made at the time the board had considered. And in the Falwell case, restitution was also still being made prior to the hearing. So I don't know if there's a huge distinction. When we take a look at restitution, we look at it as timely good faith effort.
Pardon me?
We look at it as timely good faith effort to make restitution. So I don't know if there's a huge difference between.
Well, counsel, let me ask you that because I'm going to follow the earlier questions. At the time that the board is requesting or suggesting an increased sanction, they obviously had access to all records that you had access to. And I guess you're standing before us, or Mr. Koblenz is standing before us today, suggesting some $49,000 has been repaid. Why had it not been repaid at that time?
Well, that might be a question better for Mr. Koblenz, Justice O'Neill. However, I believe that he has gotten the funds from third parties. I don't believe he had the funds personally, and Mr. Koblenz can speak more to that, but it is, he has made these restitution payments. Mr. Koblenz has provided me proof. To Justice French's concern, should restitution not be paid, should a check bounce, should something happen, the panel's recommended sanction does have that safeguard. So we're going to verify, we're going to make sure if this court wants the...
Well, maybe you're not understanding my question, or maybe I'm not stating it properly. It just seems to me that when all is said and done and your office is suggesting 2 years with a year suspended, it seems to me that you would require for yourself to be assured that the money in question is in fact in an IOLTA account on that day. Am I wrong?
The money, the restitution? Well,
yes, sir.
Well, actually, that's
the client's money.
Well, that's a factor that's beyond our control. If the funds aren't there, then that's a significant problem. And in this case, he's just made restitution, so you can argue that until that restitution was made, it wasn't there. And that's why we're here in the first place. So really, we can only try to provide a remedy for what will happen in the future. And that's why the repayment of restitution is connected to Mr. Talika's readmission to the bar. If he does not make the restitution payment, he would be indefinitely suspended from the practice of law. And that's also under the panel's recommended sanction, which is the 2-year, 1-year state.
Mr. King, there's one aspect of this case that we've not talked about that's very troubling to me. Even if we were to accept your colleague's statement about some of the general confusion out there within the bar about IOLTA and what to do with those requirements, wasn't there also evidence here that Mr. Talika did not understand the concept of a retainer? And wouldn't that put this into a slightly different category of case that might suggest a level of confusion that would certainly not be common in the bar?
Well, and there
if
are
I've
attorneys,
misunderstood that evidence,
no,
please
I
correct
understood your
me.
Question. There are attorneys that misunderstand the rules. There are attorneys that misunderstand the true definition of a retainer, and by no means are they excused from reviewing the rules and reviewing the definition of the retainer. Justice Piper found out they went to law school, so they should know this. However, Mr. Talika has things in place to help him. I'm aware that he actually has an accounting firm that's assisting with his IOLTA account. He would be monitored upon the reinstatement to the practice of law by a monitor selected by our office. So again, that's a monthly monitoring in which that attorney would make sure that he was complying and would inform our office if he wasn't. And bottom line, I mean, apart from his incentive, he seems to be very motivated in order to practice law again. Bottom line, these safety guards are there. Should he run afoul of the rules again, he won't be readmitted.
Does that monitor have to be in place for just 1 year, or could we also change that requirement? Is it just 1 year?
Well,
could it be a longer period?
The court can provide a monitor for as long as the court wishes.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, the second reason, we've talked about the first reason, it being that this case is in line with the Falwell case. The second reason is that the sanction that the panel recommended, in fact, functions like an indefinite suspension. There's three aspects of the panel's recommended sanction that really has those safeguards. The first is that this is an actual suspension. Mr. Talika will not be able to regain his law license for a full year, and as we've talked about, he'll be 75 at that time. Now, a respondent will also be monitored for a year before the reinstatement of law. And the restitution issue is...
Did you say that he'll be monitored for a year?
I'm sorry.
After his reinstatement?
That is correct, Your Honor. He'll be monitored on probation for a year once he's reinstated to the practice of law. So we have that safeguard as well. Most importantly, what we've been talking about here is the restitution issue. He cannot regain his law license until he has fully repaid restitution. And we will make sure that that is indeed the case. And this court, if they needed additional insurance, could go further. They could require that the respondent, Mr. Talika, have to petition for reinstatement under GovBar Rule 5, Section 10F. So In all practicality, the panel's recommendation of a two-year, one-year conditional suspension, it functions like an indefinite suspension because he would not be able to be reinstated in 1 year. It could be possibly more, and so on. But until that's satisfied, he would not be able to get in. Frankly, Relator is satisfied either way. However, we believe that the sanction that the panel has recommended is the more narrowly tailored sanction.
Are you suggesting that we should consider requiring a petition for reinstatement in this case?
That is if an additional safeguard is necessary. We're not saying that it has to be done, but if that is...
What is your view of the necessity of that in this case? I don't know that we've ordered that in other cases, but I'm not clear on that.
I don't believe it's necessary.
Okay.
However, if that was something, because under the rule, if it's a termed 2 year, it is just an application for reinstatement. It would have to be an indefinite for there to be a petition to where there's a hearing. Now, of course, the application would be subject to our office's review, the board's review, client security fund's review. So there would be significant people looking at the application itself. So we don't think it's necessary, but that is an option should this court think that it's warranted.
Thank you.
Counsel, the opposing counsel relies heavily on Falwell, and I believe you mentioned Falwell as being an appropriate. There's some distinctions there. Falwell was an attorney that was admitted in 91, not, I believe, in the 60s, as this gentleman. So he was at the more of the beginning of his legal career as opposed to the end of his legal career. And, the winding down here and the protection of the client for someone in Mr. Talika's place is my concern here. Then I don't think that was present in the Falwell case. That was a case that was unanimously approved, that sanction, by the court. But I'm concerned with someone who is, I guess, your suggestion of having additional reports before the 1 year is allowed to be terminated, the 1 year suspension, to make sure that there is still the recognition that there's limitations on his ability to deal with a fuller caseload and the need to cut back and stay abreast, I think is something that very much concerns me, given the age of Mr. Talika compared to the other cases that are being utilized by opposing counsel here.
And I can appreciate that, Justice O'Connor. And Mr. Talika has actually taken proactive steps in that regard. We didn't require him to contact OLAP. We didn't require for him to seek a psychology evaluation on this matter. He did that on his own.
That's a compliment to his counsel.
Correct. But he complied. So those are factors that are going to exist. And that is the reality of this case. We can really just hope that he has taken this entire process very seriously. We think he has. But he seems to understand his limitations, that he cannot take on so many cases without it completely falling apart. And again, we can just, because it's not to punish, we can just hope we've got the safeguards and trust in our system that should he misstep again, we'll be there to correct that misstep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Koblenz, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I would simply like to reiterate the fact that Mr. Talika has had a storied career. I don't believe that his experience should be held against him in the way that this court looks at his matter compared to somebody who had only been practicing law for a shorter period of time. I believe that the totality of the circumstances calls for the on the de novo review by this honorable court to instate the sanction that was approved by the panel and recommended by the panel and also recommended by the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, which would be a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed.
Do you know how long his OLAP contract is?
I believe that it is 3 years, but I'm not certain about that, okay. Your Honor. I don't have an independent recollection of that.
Great. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?